Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, my fine friends. Welcome to another edition of Rahalastapa, this week with the fantastic and multi-talented Andy Osho. Look, we're doing some Rahalastapas live in a theatre with an actual physical audience in May, June and July at the Clapham Grand. Go to richardherring.com/gigs to find the dates and the ticket links. If you can't make the theatre or if it sells out, because it will be social distance, so it won't be a capacity venue... you can pay to see the live streams of those shows as well. If you can't afford to pay, they will ultimately be released as podcasts, but maybe with some stuff edited out. If you want the live fun and joy of all the goss, watch them live, either in the theatre or at home, richardherring.com/gigs. I'll be announcing the guests as soon as I get them. First of all, it will go to the monthly badges, gofasterstripe.com/badges. That's just one of the many benefits and extras and gifts you get for being a monthly badger, £3 a month, and you'll be helping us make more podcasts as well. And what else? I'm feeling quite well. This is slightly out of order, so this was actually recorded before the Dominic Diamond one, but there may be some confusion about where I am in my long process, in my difficult fight against cancer. Been pimpsy. Thank you very much, the NHS. I've been extremely lucky. Do keep checking your bits, everyone. Do keep checking them. It's Testicular Cancer Month, Awareness Month. I was made aware of it quite brutally this year, so I don't need a month myself, but maybe you do. Check all your bits. Stick your finger up your ass. You know, it's fun. If nothing else, it's fun. I don't know what you're looking for up there, but, you know, you can give it a go. We're carrying on with Twitch on Mondays. Usually we've got a snooker, Wednesdays Rahalastapas, and Thursdays Twitch of Fun, which is a lot of fun. It's got fun in the title, and I'm very much enjoying those. Come and see those things for free if you would like. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Andy Osho. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's a bona fide legend of lockdown. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Welcome to... Look, I'm a legend of lockdown. Hooray, I'm a legend. That makes up for losing a testicle. So welcome to Richard Herring's lovely standard telegraphing patriotism. That's behind me. Is that a standard is another word for flag. And I'm just proving that I'm proud to be British because it's very important to prove that right now. And I don't think anyone's got a bigger flag than that. So I am the best. But I was hanging around with the crew of the Ever Given container ship on the Suez Canal this week. I bet them they couldn't go all the way up the canal sideways. They took the bet on. They were great lads. I don't know how they got on. Anyway, they call it Rahulastapa. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. Thank you to everyone for voting for me and for that Chortle Award. That's very lovely. I do deserve it. And I'm delighted that Chris Evans, not that one, is not included in the award. He does not deserve it. He's done nothing. Nothing! So I'd like to give him my own award. But, you know, can't be bothered to sort it out. So, yes, look... Look, thank you for all the concern about my health as well. I'm going to be talking about this a lot, okay? So strap in. It's going to be on my mind for a while. There's going to be a stand-up show. There's going to be a podcast. There's going to be a book. There's going to be a sitcom about it. It's all going to happen. So, you know, skip through this if you don't want to hear about my bollocks. But I'm nearly back to normal, though. It's 4 weeks to the day since the operation as we're recording this, and my ball is yet to grow back, which I am a bit concerned about. People are always talking about growing some balls, being manly. Let's put up that graphic. Have I got the right one? It's not gone on. Oh, there it is. This kind of quite unpleasant, actually. You can buy a thing saying grow your balls, don't be a pussy. That's what I'm talking about. It's like that horrible idea that somehow masculinity is contained and strength is contained within these weakest fucking things that you could possibly ever imagine. Don't be a pussy. What's stronger than a pussy? Nothing is stronger than a pussy either. And I'm thinking about the cats, but also the other kind of pussies is better. It seems I'm so unmacho, I can't even grow one ball. People, and presumably all those tough men out there grow multiple balls. Some balls certainly implies more than a couple. Presumably they had two to start with. So they're walking around with scrotums bulging with testes. And however much I hold my breath and push, my diaphragm, still just one, rattling around there like a hermit crab in an oversized shell. Maybe I'm trying to rush things, even a ham hand. Grows back only after 1 month, so maybe I've got to work it out. I didn't take the prosthetic. That might be what a prosthetic looks like if you're watching the video. I'm slightly regretting it now because there's a lopsided element to it. On one side, it's noticeably nothing there, and then you turn around the other side is, you know, like normal at the moment. And I have thinking maybe there's a bit of variety act in it. You know those old acts that used to be sort of half man, half woman, they turn one way and then they turn the other way and they'd be a woman and then they turn the other way and be a man. Maybe I can do one where, you know, I turn one way, I'm a five-year-old boy, I turn the other way, I'm a grown man. Just it's a testicle-based variety act. I'm not sure whether that will work out or not. I can't be sure whether I'd be allowed to do that. It seems distasteful. you know, look, I have lost a ball, so I am going to go on. And I know every time I tell someone this, they say, have you looked in the last place you saw it? And I'm like, yes, of course I have. They're just trying to help, but it's annoying every single person. They go, have you looked in your scrotum? As if I wouldn't have looked in my scrotum. I say, yeah, my scrotum was the first place I looked for it. It's not there. That's why it was weird. But people are odd and they invariably say, do you mind if I check? I say, look, I've definitely checked my scrotum. You don't lose a ball and then not look for it in your scrotum. Do you think I'm stupid? And they say, just let me have a feel. You might have missed it. And I go, all right, go ahead. But believe me, it's not there. And they're like immediately, oh, look, I found it. Sometimes you just need a second pair of eyes, don't you? And I say, no, you haven't. That's the other one. And they're all, what, you had two? And I say, yeah, of course. And then they get angry with me. Then what are you complaining about? I say, I don't think I was complaining. I was just stating the fact that I'd lost a ball. But you've still got one ball. Yes. So you've still got more than the average number of balls. What do you mean? If you averaged out, most men have two balls. Most women have no balls. There are slightly more women than men, and some men have one or none. So I, all in all, one ball is above average in the balls department, and here you are crying and sobbing about, oh, I've lost one of my balls, you with more balls than an average person has. And I say, I've had testicular cancer, I thought you'd be sympathetic. And they say, well, you were very wrong about that, very wrong about it. So good. So that's what I'm saying, there's a lot of material a lot of material to be had. Look, I'm having chemo on Friday, which sounds scary, doesn't it? But as with all of this thing, it's sort of like the holodeck experience of cancer, and it's a very light chemo. I don't think it'll affect me too much, but we may not be back next week. I mean, no, if it's really bad, I might never be back, but I think it'll be okay. We may not be back next week, but if I'm well enough and not too tired, we will be back next week.
Oh, my gosh. Rahalastapa.
But let's do this week's show. My guest this week... Oh, has to follow all that talk about balls. And it's quite, and the what she's most famous for is quite apt. She's probably best known as Dr. Rogers in Footballers'
yes.
Wives, Extra Time. What I like about it, that show, is the S of Wives is like a dollar sign, even though footballers are, generally speaking, in the UK, it's a dollar sign, but the S of Footballers isn't a dollar sign. And that's what I'm going to be talking to my guest about for the next hour. It's the wonderful Andy Osher, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey,
hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm so excited to be reminded about that classic role, Dr. Rogers, of footballers, dollars, wives.
Well, and only an extra time. So was that like the late night? Was that the Hollyoaks After Dark, slightly sexier version?
Yeah, I think it was on like ITV2 before people started watching it as well. So I was really in the corner of the corner.
And were you called Dr. Rogers as a sort of carry-on style?
I just got that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have to go back and do the whole thing again if you did not realize.
I played it wrong.
Like, you were meant to be playing like Sid James.
Yeah.
Well, I will check it out. I didn't catch it myself, but I will try and find that. It must be on YouTube somewhere, right? It's not in your show reel, I don't think.
It's weird, isn't it? That one didn't make it in. I think it got nudged out by insert other obscure role that I've played at some point.
Hey, you've done I mean, that's what's amazing about you, Andy. I know your comedy well, and I've seen you perform a few times. And I was, you know, and I knew, well, you know, I had actually spotted you, as I'd mentioned before we started, on my favourite TV show, Death in Paradise. You know, you may be thinking people are going to pick up on I May Destroy You or some of the highbrow stuff you've done, but I saw you in Death in Paradise. It was hard to recognize you. You were playing a role unlike I'd seen you before.
I was also carrying holiday weight as well, so that was that.
But you were great, and Death in Paradise is my you know, ultimately I would like to be the detective, obviously.
Right.
But I would, you know, it'd be nice to be one of the pasty English men who comes over and his friend gets involved in a murder.
I tell you what, you want to be a victim. That is a nice job to get, because they fly you over for 2 weeks and then the victim sort of dies probably like day two. And then they're basically on holiday in Guadeloupe for another 10 days. And then they have to do a little bit of filming at the end. It's a very, very nice gig.
I have wondered about that. So that's definitely what I'll go for. I was watching one the other day with Jason Manford in it. They do employ quite a lot of comedians. In the show, usually the detective has often been a comedian.
That's true, yeah.
So that would be. I mean, I just really fancy going and see. I don't really want to do the filming. I guess fancy sitting. Every time I watch it, I just think, oh, I'd love to be sitting in that little bar by the sea drinking beer.
So you just want to go to Guadeloupe?
Yeah. And be paid.
And get free paid.
Beer.
Yes. Okay. That is a big difference. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
And try and work out if I'm the murderer or not. That would be exciting.
Yeah.
Did they
yeah.
let you know before? Were you the? I don't want to do too many spoilers. You weren't the murderer in your episode, were you?
I think it's been a year since that's gone out. No, yeah. I wasn't the murderer, but they made me look very suspicious.
They make every. That's the thing. Yeah. It's a dangerous island to go to. There's always a murder, and I don't know why the murderers. They're always so inventive in their murders. I think if they just bash someone over the head and ran away, they'd probably get away with it. But they make it look suspicious. There's always three people who are in the frame. It's kind of weird the way it's always exactly the same every week. I do want to be on it. I'm not knocking it.
Right.
But, you know, they go to an island where there's a detective who's very good at sorting out that sort of crime.
Yeah.
I would say that's the last place to go and do like a convoluted thing where you've worked out a way of making it look like you were. It's always the person who wasn't there, basically. Although the last one I saw, they did bump that and it wasn't the person who wasn't there. But usually if a person is as far away as possible,
right.
They did it. They did it. Right. That's the death of Paris.
Whoever seemingly seems the furthest yeah. from the crime,
it couldn't possibly be there. It's them.
I got it.
Did you have fun? Was it a fun job anyway? I know you were working for the full 2 weeks, but did you have a nice bit of time on the beach?
I did work the whole two, well, almost. I mean, we did manage to do a little bit of snorkeling in that, but yeah, it's a lovely job, you know, and the team are like lovely. Ralph, I think he just started when we got there. So he was sort of, you know, finding his feet and was great as Neville. Yeah, I mean, I'd advise you to do it. Yeah, go for it, mate.
Were you slightly offended at taking you so long to be in it, given that it's a show that does employ every single black actor working in the UK?
Right.
Where you're waiting by the phone going, when am I going to be on Death in Paradise?
Exactly. It's almost like a rite of passage, isn't it, for black actors? Like, that's why they have to go through comedians as well, because it's like, oh, we've used up all the black actors, so now it's like, who can we get next? But yeah, it's nice to have done it, that's for sure.
You've done it, and that's it. Yeah. It doesn't matter what else happens in your career, Andy. No one can take Death in Paradise or Footballer's Wives that extra time away
exactly.
from you. And that everything else is just gravy. Now, it's quite interesting because you started off on the other side of the camera. You were in sort of production and post-production and working on that side. You had been to drama school before that as well? You went to a couple of drama schools, right?
Well, I studied acting like when I was 18. So a lot of my friends, we all did similar courses, but some of them went off to drama school after that to like full-time train. But I just didn't think that that was something that I could do. I had gaslit myself basically into thinking people like you don't get to do stuff like that. So I went and got a job working in post-production. So it wasn't like for years, I'd been doing that for like 10 years. And that's when I thought, you know what, I really want to give the acting thing a go. And I left my sort of nicely paid job and all the rest. It was crazy. Like looking back, it was sort of such a mad thing to do. But you know, you just feel it in you that that's what's next.
I think that happens to quite a few people. I think they kind of get 10 years into a proper job. And if they've been creative or they've always harboured that desire, then you're sort of approaching 30 and you're thinking, is this going to be it?
Yeah.
And so I think when you're still in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s, really, you can you can still have a crack and go, look, I'm going to give this a go. And I think that's kind of quite nice if you've. So, I mean, I understand it was a big step, but it's quite nice to establish yourself and get a bit of security and then go, okay, let's just take a crazy risk. Because you could have gone back. They'd have had you back, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I was freelancing as well anyway, so I could have, like, you know, tricked someone to give me a job in post-production. But you know, it's funny because I was actually approaching 30 when it happened as well. Yeah. And it wasn't like a sensible choice of like, now I've got to this point in my career and I've got a nice little nest egg or whatever, I'd like to try acting. It was just like, I'm so bored. Right? This is not what I'm meant to be doing. What can I do about that? And then because I was working on a show where there were a load of actors on site. So production and post-production was all on the same site. So I got to know the actors and I think they're responsible for this, basically. It's all their fault. So, you know, getting to know them, it made me realize, oh, I could actually do this. I don't know how, but it is something that I might be able to do.
Sure. So it was more acting. I mean, you've sort of gone full circle because you started out as an actor. And you were doing, you know, you went back to drama school. Was it the first drama, the drama when you the course that you were in with Idris Elba? It must have been, I guess, must it?
When I was 18. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
so you've seen him do okay. He was doing all right.
And I've gone, I could do that.
I could pinch myself. So you went to acting first, and you got quite a few roles. So what was it that prompted the move, but also the addition, I suppose, of doing stand up? Was that a thought? I can get some acting work out of it, or did you suddenly get bitten by the comedy bug?
No, well, there was two things. One is I love stand up anyways, but I, like a lot of people, I was like, but that's too terrifying. I would never do that, etc., etc. But I was also not, like, acting work was basically drying up. And so when I was going for auditions or doing stuff, I was getting terrible stage fright. Like, I remember doing a play reading or something at the Royal Court, and it's just an invited audience. There was only about 30 people in the room. I was tripping over my words and didn't, you know, it was all over the place. And I was like, I can't carry on like this. So what can I do so that I can have a bit more control over my sort of creative life, as it were? Stand up. Okay, no, I'm not doing that. That's the way to. But then eventually I did, Logan Murray's infamous course. And I just wanted to see how it would go. And I just wanted stage time. I just wanted to be doing, be a bit more in control of things. And then it sort of grew and it took over. And then the next thing, I'm a stand-up then.
Yeah, well, you did very well very quickly, because you decided to stand up about 2007 and... Is that right?
My first gig was on the Wibbly Wobbly Boat in March 2007. Right. And I think by 2010, I did my first Mock the Week. Yeah. And then by 2012, I was burnt out and I was done.
But you've done two Live at the Apollos. Yeah. You've done a lot of those shows.
Yeah.
And so is that the last time you did stand-up? I think I saw you at Latitude, I think, was the last time I saw you do stand-up, which would have been a... roundabout then. I remember seeing you.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I mean, the last time I did stand up was probably about, because I went to the States after that. And so I did a little bit there, and the LA scene is horrible. So that, you know, that killed my love of stand up as well. But yeah, I probably did that for a couple of years. So I'd say probably around like 2004, something like that, was probably the last time I did stand up.
2014.
Oh, sorry, 14. Yeah. 2014, 15, something like that.
Yeah. Cool. And so what was it? Why did you stop? Because that's quite, was it just because the acting was going well and the writing was going well? Or was it really that you had enough of the job?
I was done. I was really done. It is a hard life, as you know. It's like, it's not for everyone. And it's not just about being good at the job. There's so much more to it that is nothing to do with actually being on stage. And I was, if I'm honest, feeling quite uninspired by the industry in the sense of what was possible for me. And it's not to say that what people are doing isn't interesting or whatever. It's just when I saw that path and what was possible out of following that path, I was just like, that's not enough for me. Do you know what I mean? I just don't want to bounce from panel show to panel show to panel show, even though that's great work, obviously, and it's hugely entertaining for people. It just wasn't right for me. I think stand-up is a craft, and I wanted it to be an art form, almost like the sort of Richard Pryor relationship with it. But to do that, I have to be just doing that and get really good at that. But loads of opportunities thrown in your path, and I kept biting at them, and they were taking me down this weird path that I didn't want to go down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Well, I think that's interesting. I think that's the state of comedy as well, is that it's, well, actually, weirdly, I guess acting and writing your own plays, which you also do, is almost the way to get into TV and do like a proper sitcom with a bit of oomph to it. That's happened obviously at two or three kind of more actory people in Fleabag and I May Destroy You and Chewing Gum, she did before, didn't she? And it's as a comedian, you really are, that's it, isn't it? It's either what I'm going to do is panel shows, even or present a game show, or, you know, and you're not, that's not really, it's sort of, I feel very sad about it, because when I started, you know, you'd think, oh, I could get my own show on the radio, and then maybe we'll get a show on TV and we'll do stand-up and do sketches or whatever you want to do. And that just doesn't really seem to be open there for anyone anymore. So, yeah, I can understand why. And, you know, I think the acting was obviously going well and the writing was going well, and America's beckoning, which again seems to be a place where a lot of black actors decide to decamp to, because the UK doesn't itch itself as to go to America, for example. But lots, you know, lots of black comedians as well from the UK have gone across to America and done fantastically well out there. So it is, Is that a you know, because America doesn't seem like the least racist country in the world to me. But is that, does that reflect badly on the UK? Is it a problem within the industry? Do you think that?
Oh gosh, I mean, that's such a big topic, isn't it? Because it's not out and out that like the UK is terrible and would rather have a white actor do blackface rather than actually hire a black person. It's not that bad, but it's just a little bit frustrating in terms of the outlook of what's allowed. Like America, as much as they have terrible problems with race, they also there's loads of space for underrepresented groups. Well, they're not so underrepresented anymore in the States. They're not there yet, but there's a lot more space. Whereas I think in the UK, black and ethnic minority, I'm not going to say BAME, but, you know, the industry is still figuring out where to place us and also allowing us to break out of stereotypical ways of seeing us. You know what I mean? Like, it's not all Top Boy, and there's nothing wrong with Top Boy or whatever, but we got to have other... you got to represent us in other ways or give us the space to represent ourselves so we can let you know that we don't all live on council estates and we're not all, do you know what I mean? So that's the frustration, I think. And sometimes I guess black performers and artists get a bit frustrated that they can get in, but only through this really narrow lens of perception. So in the States, you can really get cast as any role, really. And it's much more interesting what you have access to there. But the UK is like not far behind and is learning. It is like people are in the industry making an effort. So I don't want to sort of dog on them and say, oh, you know, it's terrible, because it's not. But it's just very different. America's kind of extremes, isn't it? Because they will have a black president and then they will have Trump. It's just like
they go from one to, that's fair, isn't it? It's have a black president and have an anti-black president.
A white nationalist. Yeah. You know,
it's fair.
So
that's there could be nothing more equal than that. I mean, that's equality right there and then. And how did you find? Obviously, you've come back from America, and so you're in America for 3 or 4 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And so what was it working out for you? You did a lot of work out there and you were getting roles and you're in movies and TV stuff. And...
Yeah. It was good. I think that my biggest takeaway was learning stuff. So I learned about myself. I learned about the industry. And then the work was kind of secondary, because it wasn't like I was, you know, flying off the shelf or anything, because they got black people there anyways. So, you know, so for me, the takeaway was I had space to write my book, but also I just learned so much and just I gained a lot of confidence and belief in myself to really trust myself to choose the path that I want to be on, rather than just get onto rails that somebody else has, get onto, you know, tracks that somebody else has put down and, oh, okay, I suppose this is what I'm doing now, which is kind of how I was with comedy. It's just like, all right, these things are being offered, so obviously I'm supposed to say yes, even though I'm not really enjoying a lot of this stuff.
Right. And you've come back and it's, you know, it just, I'd seen the book was out and, since I've booked you, like, it seems you've sort of exploded everywhere, because there's the podcast you've got as well. And there's, we'll talk about all of this. You've just done a really great thing for Comic Relief where you learned to be an opera singer.
Yeah.
Your photo is in Line of Duty and I'm guessing,
hey,
I'm guessing it's going to be more than your photo. But I really hope they went, Andy,
we just had a lovely day doing loads of different photos. Oh, it was glorious. Jed was there. Martin came in to see how we were getting on.
So that's whatever that is. And I know we can't talk about it yet. It's very exciting. Whatever may be coming there is very exciting. Let's talk about that. So let's talk about the Comic Relief thing first, which I just... which it was like a terrifying prospect that they took five comedians.
Yeah,
comedy and John F. Jennifer Saunders, I suppose, counts as a comedian, and you counts as a comedian, Alex
funny
Fricker,
people,
and funny people, I think, on the whole, weren't they? But our friend Caroline Quentin, who's been on the show, and Jade Adams, who's been on this show before, and just genuinely in 24 hours, you had to learn to sing Ness and Dorma in Italian, is it? I think
yes, it is. yes, it is in Italian.
And did a banging, brilliant job. If you haven't seen it, just there's a short thing on YouTube where you can see your reactions to finding out what you had to do.
Oh yeah,
and the fear in your face.
You know,
all of your face.
Yeah, to be honest with you, the way they cut it, they made it look like fear, but we were all just so moved. It's not even as like cool and funny as that. It was just like we because Jade said it, you know, no one's heard live performance for a year. Yes. And then we didn't know what was going on. So we saw some people down in the stalls and the curtains were down. And then Jennifer, I think she turned around, she said, I think something's going on. And the curtain went up and there was a full orchestra, socially distanced. And then the singers stood up and then the tenor just sang and we just all burst into tears because it was just so beautiful. But and also Nessun Dorma, when you take it away from any associations you have with football or whatever, it's an incredible piece of music. So, yeah, we were just all a bit overwhelmed. Really. Caroline Quentin was like, okay, I'm off. Went to sort of wipe the mascara away. But, yeah, it was quite a powerful moment.
Yeah. And obviously they'd chosen you all knowing you could sing, I imagine, because it would have been terrible if you couldn't sing. But had you ever done anything of that level before?
God, no. I mean, you know, the crazy thing as well is I've sung in theatre shows, like not musicals, but shows that have a bit of music in them. And I did a little show, comedy and singing, comedy and songs or whatever, at the Vauxhall Tavern one time. But it was nothing like this because... Opera singing is so friggin' technical and it is a whole body thing. It isn't even just about what's happening in your throat. It's totally about, you know, your ribs being in the right place and your diaphragm and your knees being soft and all this sort of stuff. So it was a lot to learn.
Because they didn't show, and well, in the clip I saw, I don't know if there was a longer thing, but it just cut from you leaving the theatre to you doing the song. So right. I didn't see any of the process
of but the terror preparation. Did they,
but it, you know, because it would have been funny if you'd not been good at it. And you're sort of expecting, you know, yeah, probably it's, you know, maybe one of them won't be very good, or maybe none of them will be very good, or maybe, but actually you're all like bang on. And like, I mean, Jade Adams, I thought right. They might put a record on when she came on.
Do you know what I mean?
It was so astonishing, because I know Jade and I know she can sing, but it was just so like an opera singer. It was unbelievable.
Oh, her and Caroline were amazing. I mean, Richard Curtis came up to us beforehand and said what you just said, like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. It could go either way. It could be funny if it's a disaster. And we're like, all right, mate, thanks for the, you know, vote of confidence. But, you know, as it turns out, everyone was great. It was just great. Such a lovely team to do that with, and just to put yourself out there way outside your comfort zone. It was a real experience.
Well, it's doing it live as well. That's the, you know, it's not even just like we're going to do it. You're going to do it live. If you fuck this up, that's it. It's live TV. Everyone's going to see, you know, like, I know Alex just did his bit and then the biggest smile you've ever seen anyone get. When he got
brilliant.
Through it, it was just, you know, so you could, you knew everyone was nervous and you knew you could sense the sort of relief when it all worked out. But yeah, it's great. Do check it out if you haven't seen it.
That's really funny. I haven't seen it, so I didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, because as they gave the countdown, because you could hear it in the studio, I could, because I was all right. And then as soon as the countdown started, legs started shaking. You know what I mean? Like, it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
Well done. It was, and you know, rarely for comic relief, it was very entertaining.
Nice on comic relief.
Thank you. Comic relief are great. They're great. It's rare that it's rare, I think, that it impresses you. I have to say, there's loads of funny stuff on it. There's some stuff. I mean, there's some stuff that's not meant to be funny, right? I don't think you're meant to be laughing at the little films in between, but
they don't play them for laughs. No.
They don't play those for laughs. I mean, you know, I'm sometimes laughing. And your podcast, which is very, you know, I've listened to a couple of episodes of your podcast today, Creative Source.
Yeah.
And so what was the impetus to start this up? Is this quite a new thing, right? Or is this during lockdown?
I started doing these as a live stream on Instagram probably about 2 years ago now. Right. And so every Sunday, basically, I would have a conversation with whoever showed up and we would talk about a different topic to do with being a creative. And then afterwards, I was like, I feel like this has more life in it. And I was going to just take the audio and, you know, put that out as a podcast, because I did 50 of them in the end. And then I thought, no, start again, because I was kind of conversing with people and chatting and going, oh, hi Ian, how you doing, you know, which probably isn't going to make great audio like for a podcast. So I thought, start again, start the conversation again, and just say what I want to say today about those topics. So it's basically all about creativity, and you know, I take a different topic every week and just talk about it, and hopefully help people feel a bit more inspired and like, not motivated as in get out there and do it. It's not, I'm not a drill sergeant or anything like that, but it's more like, here's a different way of seeing these different things so that you can empower yourself, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's a very lonely thing, and it's maybe especially this year if you're working and creating something, you know, if you're a writer writing anything, or if you, you know, if you're an actor not acting or whatever, you know, it's very lonely. It's really great just to hear those issues that you all have sort of discussed openly by people who are doing well. You know, I think that's nice. You know, you can say, look, you'll go, there's one about rejection, and you have Richard Osman on talking about that. You think, oh, you know, if Richard Osman has been rejected at some point, then there's a hope for us that we could go on to present, you know, 10 years of TV and write a book that sells a million copies in a day or whatever.
Totally.
So, you know, it's great. You know, it's good to know, and it's, and to look at the positives of that. I think that's my sort of take home from this whole year and everything that's happened to me in the last 12 months is it's sort of understanding the, you know, it's, there's bad stuff, but it's taken the positives out of the negative situation to learn that lesson, I suppose, is what you've been talking about all the way through, about kind of your own personal journey.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because even though this has been really a really challenging time, there are some positives that have come out of it. Like people, you know, we were talking before about you being able to have guests from different parts of the world. Yeah. That might not have been something that they would have been available to do. We wouldn't have thought to use technology in this way. So that's really good. Yeah. And I, and you know, a weird little thing is I really love seeing people walking. Like just like families out walking, because it's so like back to basics, because life was so like 100 miles an hour before. So seeing people, like there is literally nothing to do. Like we've completed Netflix. You know what I mean? Like all there is to just like hang out with your stupid family and go for a nice walk. So that's really lovely to see. I've really enjoyed that. And I've started doing it myself. I try and like do that every day just to be out and, you know, fresh air and be amongst people or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, it's that, and it's, as a having kids, it's been, you know, it's been hard at times to look after them all the time and not have schools and all that sort of stuff. But it's been really terrific as well for just spending more time together, and the kids spending more time together, and becoming a more of a unit most of the time. They have their moments, but you know, it's been I mean, that's it. To look at the positives, and to, you know, when you have something. And obviously a lot of people had to cope with really terrible things this year, either being ill themselves or losing family members. But it's sort of, again, it's about, I guess, understanding how fragile everything is and making the most of it while we've got it as well. You know, so it's my own little personal journey. I've been over the last 2 months, just sort of, I've come out of it feeling like so much happier, I think, in a way than I was before. Because I just sort of feel, you know, like I'm not, hopefully not going to die. But there was a point where I thought, oh, is this going to kill me? And you sort of just appreciate what you've got and how lucky you are, you know, whatever that is, I think. So it's, you know, yeah, hopefully it's difficult to know. It's difficult to know whether we'll all come out of it and everything in a year's time, everyone will finally collapse and everything will fall apart. Or, as again, we were saying before the podcast, whether it will turn into a sort of, I mean, you didn't use the word fuckfest, but hopefully I'll turn into a massive fuck fest, and they'll let married people join in with that for 3 or 4 months, and then
you've earned it.
Then you have to go back to your lives.
Respective lives, yeah. Well, yeah, sure, fuck fest, why not?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, talking of fuckfests.
Oh yeah,
we do have a similar backstory in our comedy shows.
Oh yeah,
in that what your 2011 show I think was about dating.
Oh right,
and
yeah,
you
yeah,
would
yeah.
and you would and I'm not saying it was a fuck. So it wasn't a good link. You went on dates with someone from your audience after every show.
Yeah.
I did a show, it was a different idea, in 2004, where for the show, I dated 50 women in 50 consecutive nights. So it's a very similar thing, except I did, you know, it wasn't part of the show. It was part of the show in the end, but it was before the show.
Sure.
So I had that experience of going out with loads of different people in a very
what
short
What did you learn from that? That is fascinating.
Yeah, well, it was good. It was good and it was terrible. I was very ill afterwards because I just was drinking every night and getting pissed every night and staying out as late. I sort of made rules for myself which I basically stuck to, which was as long as they wanted to carry on the date, I would carry on.
Oh right, that's not a rule. That's just being out.
Well, you know, but I got very tired and. But also I was very sort of shy about asking people out or getting into relationships with people if they made it really clear they fancied me before that. And with this, and I was really nervous even about doing this, and even though it was stupid, but because it was sort of like a game and it didn't matter, I just went on 50 dates with 50, not exactly random people, but friends of friends and people who were single, and it's occasionally someone I didn't know at all. There was no expectations about it. And because you'd spend an evening with someone, you'd often have a really good time with them. So it became massively confusing because I basically had to then go on a round of second dates with quite a lot of them. And, you know, so I was.
Oh, you guilt dated them.
I was occasionally. But it was, you know, but also because what we made realize is like being honest in relationships is absolutely the best thing. Okay. And I think a lot of men, especially, think they have to lie and that they think women are a different breed and are looking for something different. But if you look, if you want to date 50 people in 50 nights, don't do it. It's insane. But if you want to do it, then if you, as long as you're honest with everyone who's doing it and saying, you know, this is what's going on, it's fine. They want to do it. That's fine. It's if you're dating 50 women in 50 nights or 50 men in 50 nights and not telling them.
Do you know, because I'm picking up on what you said about men feeling like they have to lie, because I'm just like, you know, playing back some of my sort of dating history. Do you think that's a thing for guys, that they think that they have to say things that women want to hear?
I think, well, this is me, and I'm a bit older than people who are dating now. I feel my generation were brought up as men to think, like, that women were there, you know, were sort of like this wall of resistance, and they didn't really want to have sex or be with you, and you had to persuade them or trick. You know, you look at all the films in the 80s and 90s, the romantic comedies, it's kind of people tricking people into going out,
right,
you know, lying about who they are. And you know, and I think it took me ages to realize, you know, obviously people are, everyone's in a spectrum. It doesn't matter what sex gender you are. Is, you know, some people want to be with one person and want to wait till they're married, but most people are, some people want to have sex with everyone they meet. Most people are somewhere in between that.
Yeah,
and, you know, and women aren't, you know, women obviously, it just took me ages to realize that I think that, you know, it was that women were the same as men in that
they're
way.
Just,
and
I think
a lot of men don't. Exactly, if you're honest about it, but I think you're made to think, oh, women will want a commitment. I was weirdly, as a young man, I was very into the idea of commitment, and it was my parents had met when they were 13 and they're still together, and they're 83
now. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
And so
I kind of thought that would be it. So I was actually quite prudish and really believed my first girlfriend would be my wife and all that sort of stuff. So that was my backstory a little bit. But I think realizing that just being upfront and honest, because I also realized all the people who'd hurt me in relationships had lied to me, you know, just they'd been with, you know, something else had been going on. And if they just said, oh, something else is going on, you go, okay, well, I have to work out whether, you know what I mean? And so it's just realizing it's about the empathy. And I think a lot of men aren't taught empathy. A lot of men don't think of the world like that. And hopefully they're getting better. And this, you know, again, I'm still talking about 2004 when I did this thing, but that was, I realized lots of things. What about you? It was a slightly different thing because you were dating men from your audience and presumably in quite a controlled and small way. I mean, you would go out for a drink with them after the show, or did you?
Yeah. So basically, and a lot of times they were volunteered. They weren't necessarily volunteering themselves. And then we go for a drink in, because I was at the Courtyard. So, we just go for a drink in one of the marquee bars that have been set up there. And actually, my rule was that they put the drinks out beforehand. And so mine was a tonic water dressed up to look like a gin and tonic or whatever, and they had a pint of beer, and we just, I think we'd have like two drinks and then that was it.
Right.
But then the only thing is like on the Friday night, it was so heaving in the Courtyard that we had to start going elsewhere, because the bar would like set a little reserve a table for us. And so, it was really straightforward. Grab the drinks in the bar, go and sit down, done. But on the Fridays, because it was so busy, we had to go somewhere. Yeah. So then it really felt like I was leaving the sanctum of the Courtyard. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, I'm just going to text all my friends and let them know where I'm going. Yeah. You know, so, and then, yeah, so that was a little bit weird. But there was one guy, I remember he was quite young actually. And I thought, oh, he's actually really nice. But he had to go and meet his family afterwards. Oh. So he was like one of two people that I thought, oh,
I found it interesting that when, you know, especially with not really trying to match up with people that you want to match up with, and just like random, really, it was just like, who do you know who'd be up for this? But actually the number and the meeting, because I would do like a whole evening with people or a whole day sometimes. You'd meet them and go, yeah, no, this person's not my type at all. You know, we'll just have a fun time. But actually spend a couple of hours, two or three hours with someone and really get to know them. And you kind of go, oh, no, actually, I really like this person. And right. You wouldn't have immediately, I would never have chosen to go out with them. It was just massively confusing. And I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but it was. I did end up going out with one of them for about a year afterwards.
Wow.
But it took quite a long time to get down to one.
And narrow it down.
And then it didn't work out, but it made me much more open to try and just go, you know, just to go on dates, which I think is an American thing. You know, I think that's why you'd have in Scotland, and I know with a largely probably English audience, I think men are very reticent about that. That's what I think men think, that if you're asking a woman on a date, then you're sort of asked them to marry you. And, you know, it's not, you can't just go, let's go out for a night and see it. You know, I thought of all the nights in my 20s that I just stayed in the house on my own, that you could have just gone, let's go out any single person in the world, because A, you might meet them, but it's still better. You might meet someone, but you're still better than just sitting at home on your own playing Civilization. But
you're right. You're right about the cultural. No, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
you're right about the cultural thing, though, because I think we need more of that American style dating. Let's just hang out, go for some drinks, have dinner, and not have any idea where it's going or any a sort of attachment to a second date or whatever comes next. You know, because we don't really do that. We just sort of stagger back to theirs, and the next thing you're living together. So a little bit of
space. That's what you do in your routine. You talk about not having dated for 4 years, but that whole thing. I haven't got drunk and gone back to someone's house. That's a very British thing. And then sometimes those sort of hookups will turn out to be something, and sometimes they could have turned out to be something if they hadn't been sort of ridiculous drunken hookups. I found it all very interesting. But I find it interesting that you must have made a choice to be single, really, through those times when you were saying you hadn't. Was that true? You hadn't dated for 4 years, or was that a comedy bit?
No, I mean it was longer than that actually, because I think it got to 10 years in the end.
Right.
It was just the way it went. And it wasn't, well, I could say it's not for want of trying, but I was doing something to sort of repel people. But yeah, it's just the way it went. I was thinking the other day that for me, I don't know if relationships fit. I genuinely, you know, you just have a conversation with yourself about stuff. I mean, maybe that I'm not cut out for that, whatever it is. And for me, I'm just like, maybe I'm genuinely not cut out for relationships because they don't stick.
Yeah. I don't know if that's, well, it may be true, Andy. I think, I think I was the same though, you know, I'm thinking like until I was ready for a relationship when I met my wife, but when I met my wife, it was like, it was suddenly quite different, even than the more serious right. relationships I'd had before. It was, mm-hmm. There was something that, you know, I wanted to like change my right. entire lifestyle because my lifestyle, especially when I was coming up to 40, was like that probably at my sort of most, what's the word? Most
yes,
you know, bacchanalian. Is that the right word? I'm not sure. But it was, you know, I was out having a good time as I approached 40, and also, but also, like there was something in me that was deeply wrong. You know, I was unhappy. I think
uh-huh.
so. I think I kind of needed to find the right person, and then suddenly it sort of made sense. But I would have said, you know, certainly through my 20s, I thought, you know, I'm not really had a couple of girlfriends in my 20s. I think, but. You know, not that it was, you know, I thought maybe that's not going to happen to me uh-huh, in the same uh-huh. way. So, you know, I think you never know. I mean, I think it must be a choice you're making. You're a very intelligent and articulate and attractive woman. So there should be no problem with you finding people.
But those aren't the things, are they, really?
So,
it's something other than that, because otherwise, why did Jay-Z cheat on Beyonce? Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm Beyonce, but like, you know what I mean? If she can get cheated on or have a dodgy relationship or whatever, yeah. then that can't be it. the attractive well, it does, sort of intelligent bit can't be it.
I think that all that sort of stuff is a well, no, but it's just getting into the relationship. You know, whether people cheat on people is another issue.
That's
but
true.
I think, but getting into the relationship, deciding to have a relationship, I think it, you know, it's interesting. And it's interesting you did a show about it. And I've seen that a few times people doing, you know, and obviously I've done, it wasn't, my show in the end wasn't really about that, which should have been the show. But yeah, it's obviously, it's interesting to see that, but equally there's no reason you have to be in a relationship, and there's no reason, you know, that in a lot of ways I think in the modern world, you know, less people should be in relationships because we've got
you're right.
the world
you know, to be honest with you, I also in my mind I associate them with trouble, like I've got life just down, you know what I mean, like I just got things sorted, I do things my way. And I like the thing Whoopi Goldberg said, is like someone asked her, like, why is she not in a relationship, or why hasn't she got married again, and she was like, I don't want anyone else in my house. It's just like, do you know, babe, I get you, I don't want anyone in my house either.
I do, you know, I can absolutely see it. And but it's sort of interesting because your book, which I'm about halfway through, I've listened to the audiobook, and it's not the kind of book I think I would usually have uh-huh. picked up in this romantic comedy, but it's got a bit weird, and it kind of made me wonder why more comedians, a lot of comedians have written like kids books, but mm-hmm. not many comedians have gone into writing that sort of romantic comedy relationship style books, and you would think they would, because so many comedians acts are about that.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, it's clever what you've done, and it's, you know, it's beyond what people would do in a stand-up act, and it's a complicated story about three friends and their various sort of dating disasters and trying to sort that out. But it's quite, you know, it's a romantic book where I've heard you say that all three characters are based on you, but they're all quite different.
Yeah. So I'm not there yet in terms of like people being interested in an autobiography. So I thought it would be nice as well to just take like little parts of my life and who I am and put that in the book. So the oldest one is definitely me now. She's kind of a bit shut off to love. The middle one is very So she's in her 30s and she is just like desperate to find love. And she keeps thinking, oh, this guy's the one, this guy's the one. And the youngest one is 29. So she's she compartmentalizes everything. She's got a plan. She knows how she wants her life to play out. And not all of them are going to get wake up call in different ways because of where they're looking from through the course of the book. But I also, like, I wanted to write something that was kind of, that spoke to female friendship as well, and just the truth of it. So it's kind of a bit of a romance about female friendship as well as about sort of intimate relationships as well.
Yeah. And was that something you always wanted to get into? Because you're a very clever woman, right? I have to say this. You've won you've won Mastermind twice, and that's not even possible.
That's actually true. Yes.
I'm very jealous. I didn't win the time I was on, and I'm very clever.
You are very clever.
So I'm very annoyed that you've got two, you're infinity times better than me with one. It's writing a book is hard, right? And I saw you talking about the creative process of writing and saying, you know, you've just got to get that first draft out and then start writing the book. But it's a big undertaking, right, to write a book. And is that what, if you wanted to do that for a long time? I know you've been writing plays and TV stuff. Is a novel
it wasn't in the sense of, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, everyone's got a book in them and all that. So I've always wanted to give it a go, but there's never really been time. But then I happened to meet a great agent who hooked me up with a great publisher, and so, you know, they were really keen to, I pitched them the idea and they were really keen to go with it. So I was like, okay, shit, now I've got to write a book. Oh wait, first I've got to learn how to write a book. So even though, you know, your fantasies about you know, being a novelist, the mechanics of actually doing it, my god, I mean, it's definitely the hardest creative thing I've ever done, because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, most of the time I don't know what I'm doing, but I particularly didn't know what I was doing with this thing. So I did want to do it, but I just didn't know how, and I didn't know what I was letting myself in for.
Yeah. And it's great that you do the audiobook, because we get, you know, it's a funny novel, and it's not just funny. It is, as you say, about relationships, and, you know, there's a lot to it. But it's nice to hear the author. Not every author could perform their own book as well as you could, as well, I suppose. Was there ever a question that you weren't going to do it yourself?
Well, only probably halfway through, when I was like, I don't know what I'm doing again. It's kind of daunting, actually, because I suddenly realised, like, how responsible I am for communicating the story to the listeners.
Yeah.
Like, this is a real thing. I've got to treat this like a job, you know what I mean? Rather than just me reading out my book and spotting, like, typos or whatever. It's like a yes. proper thing. So, but I wanted to do it because I know these women so well and I know the story. So it felt like, to me, it felt like natural that I would read it. But I get how other authors would want somebody else to as well. They've done their bit. Do you know what I mean? They might just want to relax now rather than then have to do like an audio voice recording thing.
It's a hard, you know, my book that I've just done is a short book. I think comparatively it's only like 25,000 words. And that still took 2 days to record. So you must have been doing like a sort of week's worth of recording.
Yeah, it was a week. And the funny thing is even though I wrote it, I was still tripping up over stuff and going, oh, wait, what did I? No, oh, yeah, okay, all right. Let me just do it again. Wait. I can do this. Producer was so patient with me, bless them. But it's not a given that you'll know what you were talking about.
Right, I'm going to ask some emergency questions. We did some before.
Great.
Yeah, you were good. It was good for the badgers. They're going to love it. I'm going to ask you, have you ever seen a ghost? That's my very important question for
that's
you.
That's really interesting. Do you know, I've been asked that a few times and I wish I could say yes, because I do believe in them as in theory.
Yeah.
But I've never seen one. I do not want to see one. I don't want to experience one. I don't want to experience anything supernatural. I am like the most susceptible person when it comes to films based on the supernatural. Right. So even just this conversation has given me the heebie-jeebies. That's where I'm at with it. So.
Well, you can't see my spooky. I've got a very spooky attic behind here. I know you haven't got a Union Jack up in you behind you. I don't know if that's
no. See, just
do you hate Britain? Do you hate Britain? Because I love Britain.
No, my portrait of the Queen, which is ceiling to floor.
Okay,
may I say it's just over here. So whatever.
Because I've got quite a big flag back there. That's all.
I've also got her diversity officer, a picture of them right beside her, keeping it real.
Good. I'll ask you this: if you had a finger that could travel through time, where would you send your finger to, and what would it do? And it could go into the future and go into the past.
Oh, which what finger?
Any finger of your choice. There's just a finger-sized hole to the past. You can go back and alter time with your finger, so you could just put your finger in and change something, or just feel something in history.
Okay, I think what I might do is I might just go back to when Justin Timberlake ripped off Janet Jackson's thing.
Yeah.
Just put my thumb across and save her dignity. Save everyone a lot of trouble. She wouldn't get cancelled.
Yeah.
Right? He wouldn't have to do some weird grovelly apology. Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, that's good. Not that far back in his, I suppose Martin.
It's probably like 20 years or something, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it's a while now, actually, yeah. I mean, that is history. You're right. We're so old. It's all too terrible to worry about. This is a newer emerged question that isn't in the book. If all the world's art galleries and museums got together and said, "We love Andy, mm-hmm. and we're going to let her have one thing of her choice from any museum or art gallery in the world, and she can keep it." I can see you've got a lot of taste. I can tell just from the colour scheme of your wall. You've got a lovely painting up there that's probably worth hundreds of thousands of pounds.
IKEA's finest.
Which is there something you would like from a museum or an art gallery that
other
would like
than
to
the
own?
Box office take?
You could take that. I don't know if they've got lots of money. If you want money, just take an expensive painting and then sell it.
Yeah, that's true. No, I'm not. Right. I'm not doing that. What? This is difficult.
Yeah.
Jewelry? Do I want jewelry?
There's a lot of jewelry. Well, there's some nice jewelry. There's Tutankhamun's jewels. They're probably quite nice. I quite like some of this. Some stuff in the I saw the Tutankhamun exhibition, just before lockdown, I guess it was, or maybe the year before. And there's some really good, fantastic big sort of guard statues. There's a little pencil case. I'd quite like pencil case.
I love stationery. Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take the pencil case. I'm a woman of simple needs. I'll take the pencil case. Done.
It's good. And how many cheese graters do you own in your house?
I did have three or four, but I'm down to one. But one that's like a hexagon shape, so it's got all the different.
I've got two of those, and I've got.
I don't eat cheese.
I'm doing pretty well. That's all I'm saying. I've got quite a lot of cheese graters.
Is it?
What happened to the three or four? Is they break the three or four? Or did you lose them, or did you give them to other people?
Normally, I like IKEA, but this is a fail on their part. It was one of those ones where it was like a Tupperware, but instead of it being a lid, it was a grater.
Yeah, I've got one of those as well.
I don't like it. No, I don't use it. No, exactly. There you go. So, yeah.
If you get your fingers, it's a bit more likely to catch your fingers, I think, as well.
I don't know what it was about. It was you're trying to make the whole grating game too complicated. Don't try and be clever.
Okay. Well, I'm just, that's a question that shows whether you're keeping it real and whether you're still a normal person despite all your success. And having one grater is, that's pretty down to earth and normal. And talking of audiobooks, I'll ask you this question and then we'll go back to talking about you. If you could have anyone from the past before their audiobooks to do their own audiobook.
Oh, okay.
You can go back in time before their audiobooks, before their recordings. Is there anyone you'd like to hear? Oh, I mean, it could be someone who just hasn't done their own audiobook who's alive.
Right.
Is there any author that you would like to hear read their own audiobooks?
Someone must have said the Bible, if you've asked that before.
Well, I don't know if they have. Read by God or read by the people who wrote
it? Yes, yeah. Read by God. No, I don't want to hear the people that wrote it. I want to hear I want to hear what God's accent is.
Yeah.
Does he have Middle Eastern accent, or is it more of this indecipherable, omnipotent sort of vibe he's got going on? What's the tone?
I wonder as well, it'd be the same when, what you mentioned, when you read your own book over for an audio book, you notice all the mistakes. I wonder if you go, oh, fuck, why did I do that? That was bad when I did that to Job. What was I thinking?
I meant like just sparkling water into like still water, not wine. Like,
I come across crazy in some of this stuff.
And I seem so vengeful. What's up with that? Guys, I'm a really nice person. All right, let me go again. Sorry. My bad. Yeah. That would be amazing.
Cool. And so what's coming up in the future, Andy? Is there more acting roles on the way, more books, more podcasts, do a blog?
All of those things, Richard. Yeah. That's my life right now.
So are you writing a new book? Is it with the same characters or with new characters?
No, new world, new characters. So I'm just two-thirds of the way through the first draft of it. Again, great. It takes a really long time.
It's horrible writing books. It's the worst. And I just write stupid books and it's horrible.
But it's still tough, isn't it? The thing is, you just have to sit down and do it. There's no sort of fast tracking. I mean, there's no fast tracking with any sort of creative stuff, really, but particularly with books, you literally have to write all the words. They have to be good words that people like and will understand. So, yeah, so I'm in the middle of doing that.
I think it's like, forgive me if this wasn't you, because I've been reading a few things, but I think today that you were talking about how it's very easy when you're writing to kind of just fixate on the one bit you're doing in the first draft and try and get it put rather than just spewing it out. And that's what I find very hard. I'll just like I'll be stuck for days and then go, oh, look, just if you write blah, 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 and then get on to the next bit. Mate, don't just try and make every little bit perfect as you go the first time.
When I gave myself permission to have placeholders, and really got that as an idea of like a way to just like keep the writing flowing, it just changed everything. So someone said to me, was it in Ain't No Sunshine? The I know is a placeholder.
All right.
They were gonna, you know, he meant to write some words, some different words than he had already used. But so placeholders work. Like sometimes they can be just good enough. I am going to, my book is going to be filled with I know.
That could work. I think it's weird because sometimes you do get into, usually for me, it's when the deadline is 2 days away and then suddenly I can write very easily and very quickly and it comes out pretty good. But it's like with stand-up as well. I think sometimes you come up with a routine that on stage and it just falls out of your mouth and it's sort of perfect. And sometimes you sit at home trying to make that work and actually you'll just get up on stage and the right words will suddenly come out on stage in the heat of the moment. And I guess for me, it's always deadlines and, you know, forcing myself to do things where I have to be creative.
It does focus the mind.
If you're improvising life, then you kind of have to get going with it. Right. And also before you go, we'll let you go in a sec. You've been lovely giving up your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Do buy the book. It's called Asking for a Friend. I don't think I've even said that.
Oh, no, we didn't say that, did we?
It's, you know, blokes don't buy it. No man is going to read it. But all the girls out there.
It's for the ladies.
I enjoyed it. Open yourselves up to your empathy. It'll help you guys. No, it's really good. A Reiki teacher. I don't know what Reiki is.
Oh, gosh. I might have to remove that. Where is that? On Wikipedia or something?
I think it might be on IMDb.
Yeah. Well, I did that years ago. No, it's totally true. But I don't know if I could still do it. I mean, in theory, you never lose the power. But I think you have to be practicing regularly. But it's the kind of sort of energy healing thing.
Yeah.
I think you have to be practicing. I'm more in the taking the mickey out of it now rather than the actually doing it.
But you're quite a spiritual person without, I don't know if you are religious. I don't get the vibe that you're religious, but you've sort of feel from the stuff I've read about you to be quite spiritual and to be quite into that sort of self-improvement and that sort of thing. So is it part of that strand of your...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know anything, but I'm curious about stuff. That's the thing for me. And I just can't quite reconcile that this is it. This is the limit of the human experience is just the material stuff. I think that's part of it, but I think there's more to it than that. And I'm interested to find out what that is. But I don't want to, have finite answers. I think being in the question is so much more interesting than knowing the answers. And maybe that's all we're here to do is just to be in this constant question. But people don't like not knowing. They like, you know, I know. And so that's why we always argue about stuff. But that's my thing, is that I just like to be in the question.
But that's why you gravitated towards stand-up, because that's sort of, stand-up's all about asking questions and not having to give answers, really. I think it's pointing out where the world is wrong and where things are silly, but it's not, it very rarely gives any answers. And if it does, it's not any.
They're not good answers. They're not answers to live by.
Well, it's very, look, I think you're an amazing, you're a force of nature. You're doing so well in so many different disciplines. It's incredible. And I wish you very good luck with all of these things, and hope we see you, you know, doing some non-photograph acting soon. That would be good if you are moving. If you're moving around, that's the next.
Do you know what they did with? Because so one of the things that I did on the show was like I'm a journalist, so it's one of the bits of archive footage that we shot. They put a link to it as Morse code on the box of ibuprofen that Steve Arnott bought, and someone found it.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't even know, but they tagged me on Twitter, and I was just like, the hell? These people are good. Like, there's all little Easter eggs all over the place. It's not just about the chizzes. It's like, there's a lot going on.
Well, I'm probably the only person in the country who hasn't seen a single second of Line of Duty.
All right, you don't know what I'm talking about at
no,
all.
No, I do, but I've heard so many people talking about it, I still know all about what's in it. But I am, it sounds like a great series, and it is one of these universal shows, which is hard to get now, where pretty much everyone has seen it. So it's a really big deal, and I'm delighted that delighted, even if you are just a photograph, which I'm sure. I mean, you're listed in IMDb in every episode. I don't know if they're just flashing the photo around.
I don't know who did that. So
they're putting you a Reiki teacher in there.
I know exactly.
They're putting us off. Well, no, I'm sure there will be much more from you, and it's really terrific to see you back in the UK, but also sort of exploding everywhere. So go and buy those books, listen to the podcast, and check out all those fantastic shows. Thank you very much, Andy. We'll be back next week, probably, if you're watching on Twitch. We'll definitely be back next week if you listen to the podcast. I don't know who my guest will be. It's all dependent on health issues. We'll see. Aww. It might be I'm trying to persuade my wife to do one, but we'll see. We'll see.
That'll be brilliant.
It'll be fun, wouldn't it? I mean, it might not be brilliant, Andy. It might be the end of our marriage.
No, don't say that. It will be brilliant.
If we start arguing like we argue when the camera's not on us?
Will be brilliant. I'll be tuning out. I'll be on Twitter.
We'll see. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for making the Annie Hall Show. Goodbye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rahala Stoppo with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Andy Osho. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. I am also indebted to my friend and producer, Chris Evans, not that one, who does fantastic work in keeping these going, and to Ben Walker, who's helping us with all the ads, but is also a fantastic part of our amazing team, especially when we get back into the real deal in the real theatres. Become a badger, go faster, stripe.com/badges. Why not? It's fun, it's free, it's fun. Oh no, it's not free, it costs money. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Stripe.com production. Thanks everyone. I love you all. Testicular cancer, be aware of it. Aphantasia, be aware of that as well. I don't know if there's a month for that, it probably is, but I can't imagine when it would be.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.